Okay. Let me tell you something, man. This is crazy. What the hell? Now, look, don't get me wrong. This ain't the first time I heard this shit. Okay? There was a black dude who was part of the skinheads. They even made a movie out of it, a movie about it. A black, like, how is this? What kind of backwoods Ku Klux Klan neo-Nazi shit is going on where you have a black man as a white supremacist? Then, recently, a brown Latino became a white supremacist. Now, I could see that because, like I said, this is not me giving a shot to the Latino. I love the Latino community. I love them. Okay? But there's some of y'all out there that really, yeah, there's black people that do this too. There's black people that do this. There's Indian, East Indians that do this. There's a lot of people that do this. And this started back in the day when white people felt they were outnumbered. They would go to these countries like Cuba, Jamaica, and, places like that where, how they would say, what was it? So much, a little bit amount of blood meant you were black, but that was in America. Well, outside of America and other countries, because they were outnumbered, they would tell the brown community, well, if there's a drop of white blood, then you're white. You see how they did the whole propaganda shit? It's like really crazy, man. So I want you to listen. This is another thing I was listening to on Professor Black Truth. I mean, he's very articulate, more than I am. He's real schooled and stuff. And I'm just watching it, and I'm like, yo, a Latino? And it was more than one. There was a few Latinos. First of all, I could see a white-looking Latino passing off as being white, but you got one that's brown. Like he's brown. He even got lips like a brother, and he apparently was like one of the leaders of the top boys. I don't care what they was called, the best boys, whatever. But just listen to this. This is crazy, man.
Was Latino, not some white, bright, almost white Shakira type, but a brown-skinned mestizo. And he's been online posting pictures of himself with Nazi tattoos. He would frequently make racist posts referencing the white supremacist sewer 4chan and other Latino white supremacists like Nick Fuentes. This guy posted his videos freely on YouTube, and you'll notice that YouTube didn't do anything about this guy until after he committed a mass murder. Meanwhile, they attack the black media. Channels like this are constantly having their videos struck or having their accounts terminated. People who don't advocate hate or violence, but their accounts get attacked simply because they point out that we're being mistreated and who's doing it. YouTube has been a willing haven and breeding ground for these white supremacist killers to spread their violence. But so is the white media. And they're shocked. Shocked, I tell you. They simply can't comprehend that a brown-skinned Latino would align himself with white supremacists. The very people who say that people like him need to be kept out. You have white media figures on CNN, MSNBC, all the major channels, and including the agenda-setting white media like the New York Times and the Washington Post and such. They're all on the same talking point, saying that to have a Latino as a neo-Nazi is something that's unprecedented. This has never happened before. But is that true? Now, obviously, Mauricio Garcia doesn't represent the entire Latino community, obviously. But it's false to say that he was just some one-of-a-kind anomaly. He's not. And there's plenty of precedent for this. The black community has been saying that this has been an issue for decades now, but we were ignored by the very white media who today is speechless. In a nutshell, there's cognitive dissonance going on here on a major level. Many Latinos, not all, but enough, see themselves primarily in terms of their national origin. Mexican, Guatemalan, Honduran, etc. So when people talk about building walls and mass deportations, for a lot of Latinos, they look and say, well, they're not talking about us, they're talking about those Latinos over there. The U.S. classifies them as minorities or people of color. But as the New York Times had to report, Latinos choose to identify as white. But how do you do that in a society that says you're not white? As many as are able identify themselves as white on school applications, employment applications, and driver's licenses. This is something the white media has completely refused to even discuss, but all they did was to allow the problem to grow until now something has happened that can't be ignored. As we, the black media, have reported to you for years now, for the longest time, the leaders of some of the most virulently white supremacist groups have been Latinos. For example, Stuart Rhodes, founder and leader of the Oath Keepers. His mother is a mestizo Mexican. Enrique Tarrio, leader of the Proud Boys, who was so eager to prove that he was a white supremacist, he targeted a historically black church in D.C., tearing down their Black Lives Matter banner right outside of the church, and then burned it, and took photos of himself because he wanted everyone to see this is how much contempt he had for black people. That was an act of domestic terrorism that he committed.
Dude, but look black.
The white authorities decided that it would just be sloughed off as destruction of property. And of course, you can't forget about Nick Fuentes, one of the most outspoken and obnoxious online racist and anti-Semites out there. These guys make it a point to go to insane, cartoonishly stupid lengths to prove their devotion to white supremacy, doing things that the white racists themselves don't do. It would be funny if it wasn't for the fact that they're hurting people and in some cases getting people killed. The white media is shocked that this Latino neo-Nazi was a regular visitor to 4chan. But if you follow the black media, then you already know I've regularly reminded you about the 4chan terrorist who attacked a Black Lives Matter rally in Minneapolis. One of the terrorists who planned the attack was a Latino. In fact, he's the one you see holding the gun. His name is Julio Suarez. On 4chan, he went by the screen name Saiga Marie. Suarez was the one who ended that terrorist threat video by saying, "Stay white." Earlier this year, you had Solomon Pena, the New Mexico terrorist and felon who went around shooting up the homes and offices of five Democratic Party politicians. He espoused all kinds of far-right rhetoric, and he was a contributor to LaRouche PAC, founded by the notorious anti-black racist Lyndon LaRouche. But the problem isn't just limited to Latino racists on the right. Another example is Alexandria Cortez. When she was first running for Congress, she gave a now infamous interview on MSNBC where she boldly renounced any and all other ancestry she had, particularly black. She wanted to make sure she got that out first. She renounced everything except for her white ancestry.
My identity is the descendant of many different identities. I am the descendant of African slaves. I'm a descendant of indigenous peoples. I'm a descendant of Spanish colonizers. I am a descendant of all sorts of folks. That doesn't mean I'm black. That doesn't mean I'm, you know, native, but it does mean that I can use that as, I can tell the story of my ancestors. That doesn't mean that I am that.
She talks out of both sides of her mouth. In the same breath, she admits that she has African ancestry and then immediately says that doesn't make her black. She said she's a descendant of Spanish colonizers, but you notice she didn't dare say, "But that doesn't make me Spanish." She renounced her African and Indian ancestry, so why not the Spanish part too? After all, she's a mix of things, as she said, right? Except she wasn't about to renounce the Spanish ancestry. She considers herself to be a white woman. Nobody else does, but she would still like to be seen as that. This is the problem with so-called intersectionalism. When these individuals talk about their ethnicity, they deny being black immediately, even though that black ancestry is the very first thing people notice when they look at them. But none of them decides, well, when it comes to white, I gotta go ahead and say I ain't white either. Instead, they say, well, I'm all of those things. But when you ask them for specifics, they immediately say, but I'm not black, don't say I'm black. And more recently, the racist Latino LA council members who were calling a black toddler a monkey and planning how they were going to lock black Angelenos out of any and all arenas in the city. They were happily sitting in a room planning with each other how they were going to be running the city along racial lines, specifically for the express purpose of locking black people out. Especially that Nuri Martinez, which she made it very clear black people are her enemy, not because black people did anything to her, but just because black people are black.
What?
But they didn't stop there, of course. They also disparaged other Latinos, particularly the Ozakis, because their skin is darker than the racist Latinos who were on the LA City Council.
Oh my
God. So the leaders of the most important Hispanic enclave in the United States were acting and talking like every other white supremacist you've ever seen. And these weren't Republicans or right-wingers doing this. These were Latinos on the left. Anti-black racism is a bipartisan issue. And this isn't new at all. You can go all the way back to Felix Tijerina, who was the president of LULAC, the League of United Latin American Citizens. At the height of Jim Crow, somebody proposed that LULAC ally itself with the NAACP. Tijerina's response? Let the Negro fight his own battles. His problems are not mine. I don't want to ally with him.
God damn.
They're trying to get something. Or whenever some white supremacist harms one of them, the very first thing we hear is, we're all in this together, Black-Brown Alliance. And then black people wonder why the Black-Brown Alliance never seems to materialize. And in the cases of Tario, Rhodes, Suarez, the LA City Council members, Tijerina, and even Alexandria Cortez, they all identify themselves as white, even though the society doesn't. These are just a few examples from the last few years alone. The only legitimate confusion comes in that many Latinos claim to simultaneously be a minority when it suits them, and then mark themselves as white on all their documentation. So we have individuals who identify simultaneously as minority and white. That's the issue. Okay, but how does this link to Latin America? To understand this problem, we need to take a look at Latin America specifically and its brutally racist past, and how they still celebrate it to the present. Take Brazil, for example. There's a town down there called Santa Barbara do Oeste. For the last 40 years, they've had an annual festival in which they bring out Confederate flags and dress up in Civil War attire and cosplay as being Confederates for a day. And why do they engage in this bizarre ritual? Because following their defeat in the Civil War, thousands of Confederates went to Brazil, even forcing hundreds of black people that they had enslaved to be their prisoners there until 1888, when Brazil finally got around to abolishing slavery. And these Brazilian Confederates celebrate that every single year. On a side note, next time some white supremacist tries to tell you that the Confederacy was about stage rights, it wasn't about no slavery, you'll remind them of this. Thousands of unreconstructed Confederates went to South America. And when they got there, what's the first thing that they did? All right, let's get this slavery thing going again. Yeah, it was all about slavery in any country they went to. And Latin America's longstanding tradition of colorism and racial segregation made it a magnet for white supremacists all over the world. There's a reason that the Nazis fled to Latin America after World War II. And it wasn't just Argentina they went to. They went to places like Peru, Chile, and others. Because of the blatantly white supremacist regimes that have run things down there and are still in charge today. You look at the political changes that have happened in Latin America in the last 20 years, and they've been all about race. In Venezuela, you had Hugo Chavez, who fought to break the stranglehold of the Blanco ruling class in that country. Venezuela's Blanco elites have been impoverishing their own citizens for centuries. And when Chavez came along, they made it clear they understood him to be a black man. Chavez himself confirmed as much. The Blanco elites in Latin America had frozen their nations in time. Well, at least in Venezuela, the ice began to thaw when Hugo Chavez was elected. The United States, seeing that their white supremacist stronghold down there had fallen, funded and organized a coup to oust Chavez. And don't let the white media water down the facts. The CIA didn't just know about the Venezuelan coup, they were the ones behind it. And the Venezuela coup plotters' very first act upon seizing control of the government was to announce that they were abolishing the Venezuelan Congress, the Venezuelan Supreme Court, and they even abolished its constitution. They were getting rid of every branch of government that could have opposed them, and even the nation's laws. That meant that the coup had established that the only government in Venezuela was the presidency, which they had control of. That was an autocratic government that seized control of a democratic nation. Though you wouldn't have known it by how the U.S. reacted, here was an undeniable case of an autocratic regime taking over a country and the U.S. was fine with it. But what the U.S. didn't like was that Chavez's support from the Venezuelan people was so overwhelming that the military, who were loyal to him since he had been a soldier too, they went and rescued him from the island where he had been imprisoned, and they restored him to office. And as for the Blanco coup plotters, now they were the ones forced into exile. And where did they go? straight to the United States, who had nothing to do with the coup, mind you. Then Hugo Chavez died under mysterious circumstances. He suddenly got a case of cancer. By the way, I don't believe that. I think the U.S. pulled a Vladimir Putin and used some sort of radioactive poison to kill him, but still. The Chavista revolution wasn't so easily defeated. Nicolas Maduro was Chavez's hand-picked successor, and the U.S. has been trying to overthrow him ever since, using the old playbook of calling him an undemocratic regime, etc. But Maduro is still there, and so long as he's in office, the Blanco ruling class cannot come back to power. And the same thing happened in Bolivia. Evo Morales was an indigenous labor leader who clearly isn't white, but he beat the Blanco candidate to become president of Bolivia.
He looked like a Native American.
And then he became the target of a coup as well, which clearly the U.S. was not behind, because the U.S. couldn't wait to recognize the Blanco woman who was installed to usurp him. Jeanine Añez is a dyed-in-the-wool obnoxious racist, basically a female version of Brazil's Jair Bolsonaro. Speaking of Bolsonaro, he played on Latin America's obsession with race to gain power, but it was only because of former President Lula da Silva's massive popularity that Bolsonaro was eventually voted out. Race is at the center of it all. White supremacists hate that black people point this out, because they know it's the truth. When we point out anti-black racism outside the U.S., the racists immediately start howling, "You can't apply American racial dynamics to other countries!" Actually, we can. From celebrating the Confederacy to attacking political candidates simply for being black, it's exactly the same. Not because we said so, but because the anti-black racists in these foreign countries said so. So we cannot separate the deeply ingrained and flagrant anti-black racism of Latin America from the behavior of an Enrique Tarrio or a Mauricio Garcia. It is not some victimless crime to play footsie with white supremacy. Though in the case of Enrique Tarrio and others, they've gone from flirting to consummating the relationship outright. Why is it that so many people from groups who are not white, and certainly not Aryan, go overboard to commit acts of violence in the name of white supremacy? Because they're auditioning for a position as members of the oppressor class. When you see these non-white white supremacists doing mass killings, that's them sending a message saying, "You who over here, I'm one of you, see?" And why mass violence in particular? Why is that always the go-to method these white supremacists use to try to prove their white supremacist bona fides? It's because for hundreds of years, this country has always made it clear that when these newcomers or these other groups who are non-Anglo or non-Caucasian or what have you, if they want to be accepted, then they have to show that they're on board with the racial hierarchy and helping to maintain it through violence. That's why I gave you the definition of white supremacy the other day. The absolute control of society using physical, economic, political, and social violence. And that's the pattern that's played itself out for at least the last 150 years. The Irish came to this country and had signs that said no dogs are Irish allowed. But as soon as the draft riots occurred and they started beating black people in the streets, those signs started coming down. Italian immigrants came to the U.S. and were called all manner of racial slurs. But when they wanted acceptance from the dominant society, they began attacking black people, and all of a sudden, they got honorary white status. And the same pattern continued with immigrants from Asian countries, as we see with Dinesh D'Souza, Amy Chua, Michelle Malkin, and others. And that also includes the immigrants who have come from south of the border. Black people have pointed this out for decades. After the LA City Council race scandal broke, people couldn't ignore it anymore, but they didn't do anything to fix it either. There were some people who were holding hands, and we immediately saw declarations that the racial divide had been healed. But nobody was fooled. This is sweeping the problem under the rug again, and it won't work. And now that the problem has manifested itself in a way so grotesque that it simply can't be wallpapered over this time, does anyone think that the white media, who's ignored this issue until now, will suddenly start to look at the big picture and say, maybe we need to talk about it? Will they look at the Enrique Tarrios, the Stuart Rhodes, the Nick Fuentes, the Mauricio Garcias, the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortezes, and ask why so many Latinos want to be white supremacists themselves? Or will the white media try to wait this one out and see if it goes away with the next news cycle or the next mass shooting? My money is on the latter. And be one. I'd like to take a moment to mention some of our contributors. Aisha Sarpong,
Toshad. Yeah, man, I ain't no black. I'm Dominican. God, you got to listen to Godfrey. He a comedian. He said that shit should have been dying. Because this motherfucker was black, darker than me, man. This is like, he's like black as the sky. That motherfucker was like, yo, you black? That motherfucker said, I know black. I'm Dominican. I was like, okay. The police get you, they ain't gonna say you Dominican. They gonna say, get in the back, nigga. And black people do that, man. Everybody, white people, they feel like white people got power. They do have power. Don't get it twisted. But it's like, you'll betray your own race just for the protection. You know, it's like, there was this movie I saw, and it's real, too. You know, dudes is cops, and they see their partner who's white fucking up a black guy. They join in, too, because they want to show, yo, I'm down with y'all. You know what I'm saying? I'm a cop. I'm down with y'all, man. We brothers. That's why the police is a gang. They definitely a gang. But I'm going to leave it at that, man. Crazy, man. We living in a crazy world, man. Word. All right, peace.